Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Tuesday, January 29th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are on page 3, starting with the second paragraph, My Drinking Assumed More Serious Proportions, through two paragraphs ending with amused skepticism, and the comments will be on both paragraphs. Today's readers: the 12 Steps, Marissa E., the 12 Traditions, Nancy S., readers of the text, Robin P., Leslie M., and Wendy B., and the share ID for Monday, January 28th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,470. That's 12470. And for this morning's meeting, Tuesday, January 29th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,472. That's 12472. Our newcomer greeter is Melanie C. And we'll go from there. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. I will now ask Marissa E. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Marissa.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, my fellows. This is Marissa E., recovered in Los Angeles, near Los Angeles. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service. I pass.
Well, thank you, Marissa E., and I will now ask Nancy S. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, everyone. This is Nancy S. from Wisconsin. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God. He may express Himself in our group conscience.
Nancy, you're fading out. Could you get a little closer to your phone? Or?
I'm sorry, what?
There, that's much better. You were fading out.
Okay.
Go with 3. You're up to 3.
Okay, thank you. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do this service, and I pass.
And thank you, Nancy S. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. Again, in order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 3, Bill Story. Second paragraph, my drinking assumed more serious proportions. Through two paragraphs ending with amused skepticism, and the comments will be on both, and I will now ask Robin P. to get us started. Good morning, Robin.
Thank you, Mo. I am Robin P. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida. So my drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. The remonstrations of my friends terminated in a row, and I became a lone wolf. There were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. There had been no real infidelity, for loyalty to my wife helped at times by extreme drunkenness kept me out of those scrapes. In 1929, I contracted gold fever. We went at once to the country, my wife to applaud while I started out to overtake Walter Hagen. Liquor caught up with me much faster than I came up behind Walter. I began to be jittery in the morning. Golf permitted drinking every day and every night. It was fun to carom around the exclusive course, which had inspired such awe in me as a lad. I acquired the impeccable coat of tan one, seize upon the well-to-do. The local banker watched me whirl fact checks in and out of his till with amused skepticism. Well, I can completely relate to my drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. That was me with the food. And also having all the issues with friends and family and making sure that it's such a disease of isolation. I'm either in the disease, I believe that isolation is the first step, and the disease just pushes everybody out of my life, so all I have is the food. And so it's so important that I stay connected to the recovery and to my sponsor, my sponsees, to meetings, and to every day taking the tools to make sure that I'm not in that disease of isolation, because the disease picks fights with people. You know, it's like I've seen it happened with alcoholism, or I've seen it with food addiction. It's like the food picks a fight with someone, you know, or the alcohol picks a fight with someone. And you know, and then all of a sudden, there you are, a lone wolf. I spent so much time in the disease being so alone, just me and the food. And then I thought that's all that I deserved, or that's all that I could handle, or that there was something wrong with me. And there were, I had a disease. And now I have people in my life. I have a husband, I have friends, I have family. All the steps have returned all of these relationships to me. And it's the opposite of what happened. You can see the train wreck happening in the in these paragraphs. You can see, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel and probably a train, you know. And thinking all those, you know, grandiosity that comes along with the disease, you know, I started to overtake Walter Hagen. Walter Hagen was a golf pro, a famous golf pro at the time. Chances are Bill wasn't going to overtake Walter Hagen. And then, of course, the disease took over. And the excuse of the golfing so that he could drink all day and every night, it's just amazing how if you're not onto it, the disease creates those kind of opportunities, quote unquote. And then people know better. You know, the local banker watched me world fact check. All that grandiosity, you know, and I, you know, legend said, you know, I'm not so sure when, you know, I'm not sure if Bill, how he could have handled this any differently, but I have heard, you know, when he says there have no been, there had been no real infidelity. I had heard, you know, legend has it that Bill did have some issues with that, but there wasn't a 12-step program for that yet. So, you know, thank God we do have 12-step programs and we have the steps and we have help for anything now. And I'm just so grateful to be in recovery today and to not be watching the train wreck about to happen. I've been through the train wreck, and I'm so grateful that my life's been restored to sanity. And through this, thank you. I can handle anything today, and I can be on the right course instead of the wrong course. So God bless everybody in your recoveries. With that, I pass.
And thank you, Robin P., to get us started off. And I will now open the lines up for any of those who'd like to share on these two paragraphs.
Lisa J.R., Ida.
Rachel P.
Ida A.
I got you, Ida A., Rachel P., Lisa J.R. I have Lisa J.R. first. Okay, got three. Go ahead.
Melanie C.
Melanie.
Staz M.
Is Staz, was that? Oh, Dez.
D-E-Z, yeah.
Dez M. Gotcha, Dez. Couple more?
Deborah P.
Deborah P.
Jenny S.
Jenny S. S or F?
S like Sam.
Sam, okay, gotcha. Okay, here we go. We got a good group. Lisa J.R., Ida A., Rachel P., Melanie C., Dez M., Deborah P. and Jenny S. Lisa J.R., get us started.
Thank you, Mo, for your service, and good morning, everybody. Lisa J.R. from Baltimore, Maryland. Boy, I can relate in here, and I can always relate into Bill, everything he says. And somebody shared earlier, there is a little of everyone I can relate into in the story. Silkworth, you know, Dr. Bob, all of them, all the stories in the back of the book I can relate in, because I was a low bottom compulsive overeater when I came here. And the thing, serious proportions, my bottom always had a trap door. I almost choked to death binging on salad. What this disease did to me, how it took me from, you know, and I've shared before, being an Epicurean to slumming at White Castle and Taco Bell. It was how I was eating that was so shocking. Table manners were gone. And when I was in isolation, I was like a junkyard dog fighting for a morsel of food that was found. And I'd be alone, too. That was the odd part of it. I'd be completely alone in my home, and I would be eating with such a voraciousness that, you know, I sometimes didn't even chew my food. And the amounts, you know, I can't say I I hear people say that they felt full. I never felt full. I could eat 3 dozen cupcakes and still not feel full, still get up and eat more food. This disease took me and robbed me of everything precious to me, you know, robbed me of a career, a lucrative career, humiliated me in the field that I was in. Although if you'd look at me, you would say, you know, gosh, you know, the maybe at tops 50 pounds overweight. Well, you know, to a super morbidly obese person, they would look at me and say, you know, are you crazy? But in the industry I was in, people made fun of me. They'd whisper about how big I got. It was humiliating not being able to do what I loved to do more than anything in the world. Food became my master because it took away everything precious to me. And so, yes, I was a perpetrator like Bill. I would go to work and I would white knuckle it through the day and not let anyone see me, the true me. Just like he perpetrated being a successful businessman. But at the end of the day, all, you know, there I am, me and the food. And nobody knew. Obviously, when I started to gain weight, people knew something was going on. But it stripped me of my pride. And there was nothing left but to pick this book up, but to do what you guys do. And thanks for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Ida A., followed by Rachel P. Ida.
Good morning, Mo. Thanks for doing service. Good morning, all of my fellows. Thank you so much for being here, and thanks for providing a meeting. Ida here, grateful compulsive overeater in Northern British Columbia, and I am a compulsive eater and will be till the day I die, and I have such massive blessings that you are here and that I have a program. So how do I weigh in today? How do I relate to Bill? Back in the day, I didn't think I did, this old dead man, but wow, I so relate. I think this reminds me of my first real God shot. My compulsive eating, binging, purging, and laxative use was crazy, out of control. And for whatever weird reason, I joined the U.S. Air Force because that seemed like a good idea at the time. And so what happened in basic training is they make you dump your stash. For any of you that know, yeah, you know, anyway, you dump your stash. And I was horrified. I was horrified. I had no laxative use whatsoever, nobody to talk to. And I would not recommend that as a treatment program. By the way, I would not recommend it. But you know what? I never went back to laxatives, and it took me decades to realize God saved my life. And I never went back to that purging or the laxative use. Stayed a compulsive overeater, stayed very weird about my food, but that saved my life. And I really believe that there have been other moments in my life where God stepped in and I took over the reins and made something else a counterfeit God, I'll say. I love that quote. I don't know who said it, you know, that I think in quotes. So a strange melancholy that haunts the inhabitants in the midst of abundance. And I had abundance. I had abundance. I had education. I had a great job. And I just wasn't, I was unsettled. I was so unsettled. And I looked for counterfeit gods. I looked for it almost to the grave. And today I know it's a good idea to search my heart regularly and to see what's there, because sometimes it's not my creator. Sometimes it's the food or too much work. And what I know today is every movement that I take, actionable steps in this program, I move closer to my creator and I move further from my drug of choice. And today that's where I'm at, doing my best to show up and move closer to my creator. Thanks for letting me share. Blessings, everyone.
Thank you, Ida. Rachel P., followed by Melanie C. Rachel.
Good morning, fellows. This is Rachel P., recovered compulsive overeater in Denver, Colorado. When I first read the big book at my sponsor's request, I didn't relate. I didn't feel like I could relate to anything. You know, I thought this is an alcoholic man. He wrote this in the 1930s. This has nothing to do with me. I didn't want to identify in with this whatsoever. on a subconscious level, I think. Now that I read it, now that I truly have an understanding of the steps in the big book and have become involved in vision, I identify with just about every sentence. It's incredible. In particular, this sentence, my drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. My eating assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. This is a progressive disease. The longer that I stayed in the food, the worse the food got. And I just became more and more isolated and lonely and depressed. And, you know, for so many years, I thought there's just something wrong with me, like that I can't connect with people, that I'm just damaged, and I always have been, and I always will be. You know, the end of that paragraph, Bill talks about, there was no infidelity with his wife, helped at times by extreme drunkenness, kept me out of those scrapes. With me, I started gaining weight about 9 years old, and by the time I was 18, I was 275 pounds. And that, you know, drunkenness and the food, that my compulsive eating, kept me from relationships. You know, all I wanted so badly was a relationship. I thought everybody else falling in love and getting married and having relationships around me, and that's all that I ever wanted. And I thought, because of the weight, because of my disease, because I was born to be alone, I'll never have that. And now that I'm in recovery, I realize there's nothing wrong with me. I'm not damaged. I have compulsive overeating. I have an eating disorder. And with this program of recovery, I'm able to speak to people and connect and have relationships, the kind of relationships that I always wanted, and then even more. The recovery has surprised me so much, and I'm just so grateful. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Rachel P. Melanie C., followed by Des M. Melanie.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Wilsonville, Oregon. Gratefully recovered. I like the line that says the remonstrances of my friends terminated in a row. And the reason that I like that is because I can identify. I'm looking at Bill here, and it feels like to me that he's kind of blinded to what's happening. Of course, all of my story is in hindsight, for sure. It was after the contemplation and the reflection of the steps on my life that I was able to see that it was already happening, and how I was set in motion to grab a hold of whatever that thing was. It was the all-American way that was affordable and available to anybody if they worked hard enough. And the way that I went about that is that I would pick and choose those people that would help catapult me into those places. And so I, too, had fair weather friends. And when they objected, remonstrances, when they disapproved, when they protest against me trying to change their lives, because I love to do that. I love to put my agenda first because I had these great ideas. I just knew better. I just knew that I knew better, and I was excited about sharing that with people, and I knew that you would want to know as well. And I was shocked when people would say, well, I don't think the way you think, and I don't do what you do, and so, you know, they wouldn't come around. And we would have these things between us, and there would be the amputation. The proverbial amputation of these friendships from my life. They just fell apart. They all terminated in a row because we'd have a fight of some sort, of some kind, everywhere that I went. And I didn't care. That made me more determined because I have this fighting spirit, and it was born in me as a virtue, but it turned to trash. That I'll do this thing. I will pick it up again, and if I have to, by God, I'll do it by myself. And by God, I did. Blinding myself moment by moment, bite by bite, into this hellhole of thinking that I was doing well and everyone else around me truly probably had pity on my soul because of what it looked like to them, the truth and the reality, because I couldn't see that sort of thing. I had many things that continued to tell me that I was being successful, some of these things that Bill's talking about here, because I worked so hard at digging myself into this hole. Thank God that the disease got so bad that the food stopped working decades ago, and it got so bad because that's what it takes for a fighter spirit like mine, a scraping, scrapping on the other side of the tracks, waif of a scaggly girl, to let go. My God, let go. It got that bad enough that I could finally say, I'm so sick of me. I can't stand me anymore. I don't want to hear myself anymore. My loneliness is aching so bad that in fact that I could hear once more that the 12 steps of OA were going to do something for my life. And indeed they have. I've had a psychic change. I am not the same personality that I used to be. The passions are there, but I'm being tempered. Thanks, Mo.
Yeah.
Pass.
Sorry. All right. Thanks, Melanie. Dez M, followed by Deborah P. Thanks. Dez? Press star 1 to unmute, Dez. We can't hear you.
Hello? Now I'm here.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, I
okay,
can now.
Sorry.
Thank you, Dez. Okay.
This is Dez M. I'm calling from Southern California. Thank you for having the meeting this morning and all the service that goes into that. I really love Bill's story and can relate to everything about my drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. And that was just how it was for me. Like my whole entire life, I didn't really know what it meant to have like a space in between my food or anything like that. I was always like not, you know, my God-sized hole was never full, even as like a young child. And so, you know, it was just always different sorts of food to fill that, which just continued, you know, every second of every day. And even in program, I'm on step 11 in vision and but have been in program for a couple years and, you know, realized that I was a lone wolf. My lone wolf outside of program, you know, like 12 years ago in my bottom looked awful, awful. I was like depressed for like 6 months and just suicidal every day. And all I could do was eat and be angry towards those around me. And my lone wolf, though, I think in program looked like, you know, not doing a daily inventory. This is before vision, you know, but like in the rooms, like still, you know, being abstinent from what I considered it to be then, but I wasn't doing a daily inventory. And that daily inventory, like, has really just given me such relief and like climb towards the freedom. And because I can be in a room of like-minded people, but if I'm not sharing my truth or like willing to do the work for it, then I just can continue to be, you know, that lone wolf. And I'm so grateful that I got, you know, God like placed my sponsor in here, and then I got to come into vision, and like I don't feel like the lone wolf anymore. And I just am getting like this, you know, little glimpses of spiritual relief, and I'm just going to keep trudging the road like a day at a time. And yeah, so thanks for letting me share. Have a great day.
Thank you, Dez M. Deborah P, followed by Jenny S. Deborah.
Deborah. Hi, this is Deborah, compulsive overeater. Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can, Deborah.
Okay,
great. Loud and clear. Yep.
Okay. So, yeah, I've been in and out of this program. I am back. I've been abstinent since December 1st. And it's just, I love this program. But I haven't always been that way. I've been very resistant. And I thought I could do it on my own. And the whole thing about becoming a lone wolf, I mean, that was me. It had become so bad, and I was completely isolated. I was completely alone, and I was like, you know what? This just can't go on. And that's really what I think finally brought me in to say, fine, you know, I'll do this. But, you know, it wasn't comfortable. I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily like an extrovert. I thought, oh, the people that can just dive in, and, you know, they're extroverts, and they're out there, and they're making friends. So I had to take action, and I had to, you know, go up to somebody and say, you know, will you be my sponsor? And, you know, thank God this woman just stepped up to the plate and just, like, swept me in. And it's that, for me, was just, like, the turning point. And I, you know, I started calling people, and I started getting involved. And I just suddenly was like not alone anymore. And, you know, I just finished step two, and I'm doing these steps, and it just feels different this time. I don't know. I mean, I'm taking it one day at a time. But, you know, thank God for this program, and I'm just very grateful to be here. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Deborah P. And before Jenny S. comes on, let me remind everybody where we are. We're on in Bill Story on page 3. The second paragraph, my drinking assumed more serious proportions, through two paragraphs ending with amused skepticism, and the comments are on both. And after Jenny, I'll take more names. Jenny.
Hi, I'm Jenny. I am a recovering compulsive eater. I'm really glad to be on the phone with y'all. I'm calling from Boulder, Colorado. I really also connected to the piece of the remonstrances of my friend and the unhappy scenes that I caused. And I just remember just like having the feeling of not being able to connect and like having to start to not eat around other people because they would say something to me about it, or like everybody at the table would be like so uncomfortable. And how that like really stopped me from having relationships, and I would like switch friends. And so then I ended up with these people that really cared about me, and then I would stop talking to them so that I could like continue in my addiction. And, that was like really horrible. I was thinking about like the darkness that that created. And even still when my like brain sort of like gets into the compulsion, even if my behavior doesn't, right? Like I can still want to be like so compulsive around food. And then obviously use the steps and the tools and to not do that. But I am just, I'm like really grateful that there's like a solution to this. So I don't have to like end up in like closets or bathroom stalls or wherever it is to try to hide, which is like, doesn't work because people know anyway. And that I actually get to like really show up and like work on my relationship today because of this program. It allows me to like be a person in the world and connect and like not just like walk away from my relationships because people, you know, because I'm not in my active food addiction. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I'm just like really grateful to be on the phone with all of you this morning. Thank you. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Jenny S. And I'll now open the lines up for more of you who'd like to share.
Jackie A. The E.
Jackie A.
Maggie Rose M.
Let me see,
Maggie
Marissa.
Maggie Rose M.
Gotcha.
Maggie, is it Maggie?
Yeah, Maggie Rose.
Yeah, Maggie Rose M.
Got it.
Julie E. B.
Julie E.B.
Anne Marie M.
Anne Marie M. One more.
Nan K.
Nan K. Okay, we'll stop there. Jackie, I didn't get you. I think it's H. Jackie H., Marissa E., Maggie Rose M., Julie E.B., Anne Marie, Nan K. Someone is unmuted, but just we'll have Jackie K. press star 1 to share. Thank you, Jackie.
Okay, actually, Jackie H.
H. Oh, what did I
yes,
say?
Yes, Jackie H. You said K. That's okay, Mo.
Yeah.
I love you anyways.
So
from Colorado. Recovered in Colorado.
Okay.
Wow. You know, I didn't think I had anything to share this morning. I am so grateful for this program and so grateful for the shares and so grateful for the other people. You know, we can, I have this thing that we can hide our own Easter eggs. We can hide our stuff under this layer of whatever. And then you hear somebody say something and talk about it and you think, oh my gosh, she's telling my story and this is how I relate to this. And so I just want to piggyback on the lone wolf thing because, my disease took me, oh my goodness, it showed up in so many different ways, but I look back over my life and I used people, places, things, and substances to make me, to raise me above, right? So I chose different areas to be in so that I could be, when I was a pastor's wife, I was the queen bee, and I got to get all the attention, and I got to tell people how to live their lives. And then I became an office administrator, and I got to be the boss. And all the way along, I'm like the tornado, I think, just running through people's lives. And I had no clue that my relationships were in trouble. I was just that blinded, I think, until I was, finally, yes, obviously, I found that it was. And people didn't want to be treated like I treated them anymore. And that's embarrassing to say. That's almost as embarrassing as saying I was a compulsive overeater, that people didn't, and my children, people didn't want to be around me, probably, most likely. And so today, thank you, God, for this program. I get to see this stuff that was all hidden underneath. And I am newly recovered. So there is a lot of work for me to do here on my relationships. My relationships are beautiful right now. There's some that are still really kind of messy. And I have time. I don't have to rush. But I have the program, I have thank you, I have my higher power, and I'm right sized, right? I just ask God to make me right sized, and that means not better than or not less than, because my feeling not less than just took me to another level of working so hard to feel like I was better than. And so thank you so much for everybody who's here and is sharing. And I'm excited today that I got to uncover still another layer that I didn't want to look at. I didn't want to look at that. I didn't want to say people didn't really want to be around me. And I stepped on people's toes and to get what I wanted. And I used people. And today I don't have to do that. I get to love the people in my life. And I think that's all I have to share. Thanks for listening, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Jackie H. Marissa E., followed by Maggie Rose M.
Good morning again, Mo. This is, thank you, Marissa E., recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. My drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. And then it's so funny, right? The next paragraph. Golf permitted drinking every day and every night. And this made me think about one of the stories in the back on page 423, Window of Opportunity. She talks about how, as I look back on that period, I realize how true it is that one of the primary differences between alcoholics and non-alcoholics is that non-alcoholics change their behavior to meet their goals, and alcoholics change their goals to meet their behavior, right? So here's Bill, and he discovered that, oh, look at this sport. This sport allows drinking almost all every day and every night. And I too, in my disease, right, subconsciously, I chose to be in positions, in situations. I did isolate, right, because that really enabled me to, it permitted me to compulsively overeat, restrict, and overexercise almost every day and every night. And I remember when I was in college, I had a job actually that required me to work on Saturdays. But that's a binge day. You know, that's my eating time. And so I remember actually, I had it for about a year, and the second semester, this job, they knew I was a student, and I lied and I said that I was working on a research project and I was meeting with the professor on Saturdays. And I'm just laughing, just thinking back, because I created this whole lie, right? And they bought it. And so for those 6 months, oh, it was like 4 or 5, but still I was permitted to eat compulsively almost every Friday and Saturday, you know, without interference. And I can see how even in OA, right, I've done the same thing. It might look better on the outside, and at the same time, I have taken action, and I have changed my goals to meet my disease over and over again, and now just not falling for that, right? Not falling for my disease's suggestions and just going to God. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Marissa E. Maggie Rose M., you're on, Maggie.
Hi, this is Maggie Rose, compulsive eater in Vancouver. Yes, this whole idea of being the lone wolf or having people, having fights with people and then losing those relationships. I, sitting here listening to this, I thought of a time when I would have a job for like 5 years and then it would just be too difficult because of the relationships where I was in my mind. And so then I would change jobs and my resume and everything looked pretty good and everything. So it wasn't too hard for me to find another position. And so I did that for like 3 or 4 jobs. And I remember saying to someone who was apparently still talking to me that I just was really unlucky, that because it seemed like whatever place I went to work, there were all these difficult people and other organizations that I became part of that, you know, somehow I just, and my family, that I just was surrounded with all these difficult people. And it never occurred to me in that time that I was the difficult person and that it was my know-it-all attitudes and my never agreeing with what was presented, because I presume myself to be so much more clever and intellectual and whatever that I could, you know, that I could impose that on other people, and just was baffled that people didn't listen to me or do anything about that. And I had one job where I started the job, and the boss was a very open guy, thank goodness, but he came back from an event, and he had just told my boss at the previous place that I was now working for him. And this guy's response was, well, I'm glad you have her and not me, because she always was such a troublemaker. And he laughed about that, but I actually remember feeling really embarrassed by that. Anyway, so this whole idea of looking at the world around me as the enemy, and, you know, not looking at my own disease and my own behavior, was a long part of my life, Pat.
Thank you, Maggie Rose. Julie E.B., followed by Anne Marie M. Julie.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered today by the grace of my higher power that cares for and protects me. Here in Colorado, 6 degrees when I woke up. But 50 degrees tomorrow, so there you go. I could barely listen to the first recorded meeting this morning because the progression of the disease, the marching of the disease, my memories of how it just, the ego is growing and desperately trying to survive, despite the evidence on the outside with relationships, and with my goals, as someone just said, that it's not working, that there's just a growing feeling that there's something wrong with me, and not really knowing, keep trying different fixes, new hobbies, new distractions, as it says on page 25, I could either, no middle road solution, continue blotting out as best I could my intolerable situation. That's what I did with the food. I was just doing the best I could to blot out what might have been a tolerable life for some people, but was an intolerable life for me, or seek spiritual help. But I could barely listen because, you know, I have someone I love in this disease, and they identify with that, and they're in the food right now, and I'm watching the distance in our relationship. I'm watching the lone wolf behaviors from another side of the street. And this is a person I hurt in my disease with these same behaviors, locking myself in my room with my Oreos, a couple, three bags, you know, bedbound, 300 pounds. I live free today, and all I can do is live free, help those I can, which is strangely often not those closest to me. But if this disease is marching along, if you're feeling lonely, here in these rooms, I'm never alone. I don't have to, as I said a couple months ago, treat loneliness and isolation with more loneliness and isolation. I would say to my one sponsor, said, you could call more people. I would say, oh, it's so hard for me to just call you. And it was true. It was hard to reach past this, but it was worth it. And today, I could call a fellow. And in, you know, sort of listening to that meeting, call a fellow, and they could help me just get unblocked and hear my God saying, okay, just do what's next, do what's next, keep recovering, keep loving that person, accept them the way they are, and be there for them. So I want my story to be easy. I want my pain not to have hurt those around me. But I just feel so privileged to be here today. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
And thank you, Julie E.B. And we have a little under 5 minutes. Could Anne Marie and Nan K, so we can get both of you. Can you just take about 2 minutes each? Anne Marie.
Yeah, Anne Marie M., thank you so much for your service. And Recovered Compulsive Overeater in South Carolina. You know, what jumped out at me was the with his friends, you know, telling him that, you know, he needed to stop drinking. And there was a time when I was, I haven't been always overweight. Well, in my mind, looking in the mirror, I always looked like I was humongous. But there was a time when, you know, my weight was pretty well up, and people gave me many suggestions on how to lose the weight, going to different weigh-in pays and exercising and just, you know, exercise more and eat less. It's just so simple, but that wasn't that wasn't the deal with me. And then for the most of my time, I've been in an average weight or even a petite person, and so I had the opposite, which I thought was I do see as a problem. Of people saying, oh, yeah, no, you don't look that bad. You don't need to do anything. And they just didn't understand the hell of shoving stuff down my throat and feeling sick and not knowing when I was full and just shoving food down my mouth and isolating and canceling plans so that I could stay home and compulsively eat, you know, try to fill that hole with food that never got filled. And God fills that hole for me today, and I'm so grateful for that. So grateful that I'm being steered toward developing and improving my relationship with God. And, you know, so there's things that there is a solution for me, not only the prayer, the meditations, and the steps, but part of it is one of the tools of a food plan where I have to weigh and measure everything because I heard earlier that I don't know when I'm full. So it's very important for me to use that tool and the other tools. But the most important for me in all of the 12 steps is my reliance on God and keeping that relationship strong. So I will pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Anne Marie. Nan Kay, give you two.
Hi, I'm Nan Kay from Michigan, where it is 2 degrees. And I am an overeater, and I'm happy to say that I am a recovered overeater today. The sentence that really struck home was, my drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. And I can say that my goal when I woke up in the morning was to make sure that I had enough food to carry me through the day. And if I was going somewhere, I had to make sure that I had snacks, because I didn't want to starve between breakfast and lunch or lunch and dinner. And the insanity of it was unbelievable. Even when I woke up at night, I'd wake up and I'd think, well, I think I'm hungry. I better go get something to eat. And I'd wake up in the morning and find crumbs in my bed and food under the bed. And the insanity was just crazy. And I'm happy to say that today I have found a solution. And in the doctor's opinion, where it starts out with we, and that's such a promise that I never have to be alone again. And later on it says that I will be returned to health. There's another promise. And then later on that same page of the doctor's opinion, it says that this man and over 100 others have appeared to be recovered. And I'm so thankful for the hope of this program. And thanks for letting me share. Charles H. nudged me along, and I passed.
Hey, thanks, Nan K. And thanks, Charles. So thank you, everybody, for a great meeting. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And will Leslie M. please read a vision for you?
Good morning, Mo H. Thank you for your service. This is Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.